Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, you see him. He's got his big old cigar in his mouth. That might be one of the ones that MVS sent him. I don't know, but it's Lieutenant Randy Sutton from the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. And so thanks so much for being back on the show, Lieutenant. He retired from Las Vegas Metro Police Department. He's got about 34 years law enforcement experience. And we've also got Lieutenant Jeff Winninger, former LAPD commander, now resides in Ohio, but don't let that fool you. He's still on top of his game. And I want to mention our sponsors. You know, our title sponsor, Gulls at Gulls.com. We have ComplianceTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor. Also, GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.live, SafeguardRecruiting.com, our streaming sponsor. And, you know, not only do they help agencies get the right applicants the right way, so that you retain them, but they also allow us to, during the stream and during the live show, we're streaming to over 1 million followers right now. And it's an amazing opportunity. Thanks to Safeguard for making that happen. And also twobells.com. They built a new online store at leoroundtable.com. And if you go in the upper right-hand corner of our website, you'll see the online store. You can go there and get cool shirts like the one Jeff's wearing or the mug that's behind me. And, you know, we got all of our gear on there. We don't charge anything extra for the gear. So, you know, we don't make a dime off it. We're just trying to get our stuff out there. So check that out, please. A shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFB.com. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian, and getting it on MSNBC. And also Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com, and Travis Chase with lawofficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make this show happen. And now what in the world are we going to be talking about today? We got some really a great lineup, guys. And without wasting any more time, I'm just going to go through the titles right here. We got, one, two, three, four main topics. So the first one, we've got an update from the Michigan synagogue attacker, and his brother was a Hezbollah commander. That information came out over the weekend. And then the whole ROTC that jumped the shooter, you know, that was at Old Dominion. I didn't know it, but one of them was armed with a pocket knife and took that guy out, and that's how he ended up dying. We got Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman, Fetterman. He is blasting the Democrats for withholding funds from DHS, and then we have a congresswoman that changes her vote on this thing after some of the stuff that's going on. So stay tuned for that. Then we got Randy Sutton himself talking about the Nancy Guthrie case and the leadership failure in Pima County. And we've also got Dallas SWAT. They killed a fugitive who impersonated an officer and guarded a congresswoman. Guy was an imposter. And we've got San Diego Sheriff's deputies unleashing a hail of bullets during a traffic stop at an armed passenger. We've also got body cam showing deputy trying to help a man in crisis before a fatal shooting. And if we have time to get to it, Sheriff Keith Swink refuses to retract non-citizen hiring post. And another body cam, Newark police officer, fired 5 shots into a minivan, and he ended up killing the driver. So if you guys are ready, let's go ahead and start with the first one here. The postmillennial.com. So we covered it last week. I don't want to recover it, but I do want to give the update. The Michigan synagogue attacker had a brother who was a Hezbollah commander, according to the IDF. So, again, I'm not giving the names out on these guys that are seeking to get their names out there. But the gunman who drove the truck into the Michigan synagogue last week, he had a brother who actually served as a commander in Hezbollah. And it goes on to say that 41-year-old, he shot and killed himself Thursday after crashing his vehicle into the Temple Israel in West Bloomfield Township. And so it was his brother that we're talking about. The synagogue, it's one of the largest reform congregations in the United States and houses a school and early child care center, which I did not know either. But in a statement from the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, they revealed that this guy's brother that did this, and they give his name out, that his brother was responsible for managing weapons operations within a specialized branch of Hezbollah's barter unit. It goes on to say that the unit is responsible for launching hundreds of rockets towards Israeli civilians throughout the war. And so the guy that we know in Michigan that did the terrorist attack, that talks about that and said that his brother had just been eliminated in an IAF strike on a Hezbollah military structure last week. And it goes into a little bit more detail. And it said reports surfaced after the attack that several of his family members were killed in an Israeli air strike in Lebanon days before the incident. The family was reportedly sitting down for a Ramadan fast breaking meal when the strike occurred. It killed his 2 brothers, a niece and a nephew. And it says that our bad guy here in the States was an American citizen. He immigrated to the U.S. He entered in 2011 because he was the spouse of a U.S. citizen. And he was granted citizenship in 2016. And he drove roughly 38 miles from his home in Dearborn in order to do the job that he did. And it also says that he had fireworks and gasoline in his vehicle, you know, when he crashed it. So that's the latest update. Lieutenant Randy, any words?
Yeah, I think this the frequency of the attacks that are taking place now is revealing that, once again, it is the local law enforcement which are having to deal with terrorist incidents. This isn't now. You got to wonder why this guy wasn't on some type of watch list, considering his relations. But you know, everybody, you know, there's a mass amount of people out here in the United States that that are possible, you know, sleeper cells. This sounds like this guy was a revenge bomber, if you will. It's my understanding that he was killed by security officers inside the temple. After he crashed his vehicle through the front doors, he wound up going 40 feet into the hallway, jumped out with a rifle, and was neutralized by, this is the information I'm getting, a retired police officer who was working security there. So, you know, it's really a shame that our religious institutions are forced to defend themselves with armed security officers. But this was a situation where we saw the effectiveness of having security.
Yeah, and even at the next one we're going to be talking about with the school, hopefully these guys will start realizing that they're not going to get necessarily the desired effect that they're looking for by doing some of this crap. I know that one of the guys there was one of the security guys was injured due to the vehicle, you know, when the initial impact, I guess. But that's the best news. Best news of all, the bad guy was neutralized, and it's just a funeral coming up after that. So, Jeff, did you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, it just speaks to the importance of having robust security measures in place, not just personnel, but having an infrastructure of the facility in which you're trying to protect. You know, one thing that we are seeing more and more often is these terrorist attacks that involve vehicles. You know, one we had just a little bit over a year ago down there in Louisiana, down where you were, in New Orleans. Yeah. You know, 14 people were killed. And the reality is that vehicles are very easy to get a hold of, and they can cause a heck of a lot of damage. And as a result of that, those are things that, you know, we have to live in reality. And the reality is that there's a number of institutions that basically have targets on their back because of the radicalization of many people that happen to be in this country, either legally or illegally.
Agreed.
And, you know, we have to make sure that we're taking the steps to prevent this stuff. But it's a little concerning that someone like this, you know, I guarantee you that after this incident, that there's been an increased diligence done to anybody that hears here in the United States that perhaps has family that are serving, especially at the level of a commander in Hezbollah. You want to reach out, touch these people, and make sure they don't feel like they have any anonymity whatsoever. You want them to know that we're watching them. Try to prevent some of this stuff from happening.
Well, guys, moving along, NYPost.com. We've already discussed all this last week, so I don't want to spend the show rediscussing what we've already discussed and all the stuff involving vehicles. We broke that down, but the RLTC cadet fatally stabbed the ICE-supporting Old Dominion gunman to prevent more carnage, and that was in the NewYorkPost.com. And so the new information about that is that, yeah, we've got – they didn't name the student, but he stabbed this ISIS-linked gunman to death while the other students were holding him down and beating him. And I have no sympathy, but I'll tell you, these are just RLTC students, and one of them had a pocket knife and did the nasty on this guy. And I got a warm feeling all over when I read that. Any surprise there, guys? Because all we knew was that he died. We didn't have this information, you know, immediately afterwards. So
it should. You know, I'll tell you what it shows, that those kids have the warrior spirit, and that's exactly what Pete Hegseth is demanding of the new armed forces. And this is also something that we in law enforcement need to take a page out of this book. We need to start training our cops to be warriors again. Enough of the nonsense with the diversity bullshit stuff and the reality. Yeah, all right. So
That was close. Wow.
but this is something that remember, the warrior spirit is something that has been demeaned by leadership in, the political leadership as well as law enforcement leadership in a lot of police agencies. And this is something we have to bring back. That warrior spirit is essential.
Yeah, I love it.
You
Jeff?
know, the one thing that I would say is that at a minimum, when you're talking about like ROTC, that's another thing that perhaps could have a target on its back because of what's going on over in Iran. So at a minimum, they should have a sergeant of arms. You know, there should be somebody in that room that is armed, because this can happen anywhere. And if you can anticipate perhaps that you may be a target, you need to be ready for this. They shouldn't have to stab somebody. That perhaps this could have been ended before anybody was killed, other than the suspect.
Yeah, and of course their instructor, he was, he got killed, he got taken out, and from what I understand, he had quite a career, and so that was the worst part about all this. So, guys, we're coming up on our first commercial break, and we're off to a good start. So stick with us. We got more coming up, guys. We got I think one more main topic or two, and then we got a lot of stories with video components. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
My family only cares about one thing, that I come home safe.
At Galls, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Lieutenant Jeff Winninger, former LAPD commander, and also Lieutenant Rainey Sutton, founder of the Wounded Blue, thewoundedblue.org. And gentlemen, if you're ready, let's go in and talk about John Fetterman and what's going on with the party politics that are going on. You know, TampaFreePress.com, they actually covered both of these articles. And that's with my buddy Brian Burns, who is interviewing me. He's the guy interviewing me at 3 o'clock today about the new Leo affairs. But this first title, this is the first of two articles. Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman blasts the toxic party politics as DHS, that Department of Homeland Security workers remain unpaid. Now, of course, he's from Pennsylvania. John Fetterman maintained his consistent break from party lines on Saturday, once again, criticizing fellow Democrats for ongoing partial government shutdown that has paralyzed the Department of Homeland Security. But he spells out why. The shutdown has forced emergency measures across the Transportation Security Administration, and we all know it as TSA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, and then, of course, Customs and Border Protection as well. And the legislative deadlock, it's tied to the Democrats. They are making demands for ICE reforms following the January shooting deaths of Alex Pretty and Renee Nicole Good. And you would think that they would stand on more solid ground than those two justified shoots. And that would, of course, happen during the federal operation in Minnesota, in Minneapolis. So, however, Fetterman argued that the strategy is fundamentally flawed because ICE currently retains its funding. And yeah, they're funded through, I think it's what, 2027. And so it doesn't make a lot of sense. And then the companion article to this is, while all this is going on and he's being critical of the Dems, we have Michigan synagogue attack. It prompts Slotkin to pivot on Homeland Security funding. So in the wake of all the stuff going on, you know, we have this assault that we just talked about earlier with the update, the Metro Detroit synagogue. We have U.S. Senator Elisa Slotkin of Michigan has now changed her stance regarding the partial shutdown of the Department of Homeland Security. And on Friday, she said that she's calling for the immediate funding of the agency that she described as essential just one day after voting to continue the funding freeze. And of course, what makes all this really stupid is that we're in the middle of a war with Iran, and we've had our borders open for 4 years, and we've got a lot of bad actors that have, including known terrorists, that have gotten into our country, and we're not even funding Homeland Security. Randy, you want to take us first?
It is beyond belief. And whoever thought that John Fetterman would become the voice of reason in the Democratic Party? Of all people, I got to say,
Remember who he ran against?
I don't.
Dr. Oz.
No, that's right.
Remember that? And I got to admit, God has a plan. I wanted Oz to get it, and then Fetterman was having some issues. He had, there were some issues going on with him. But boy, has this played out pretty fantastically. I mean, and Oz has got his seat at the table now with Kennedy. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Fetterman is knocking it out of the park.
We look at this, we watch this taking place, and the irrationality of thought from the party politics. I mean, is everybody that's got a D behind their name out of their freaking minds? Because the stupidity that is on display here, it's literally some type of weird revenge. And who are they hurting? They're hurting the people of the United States, the people that they have sworn to protect. It's an outrage.
So I'm glad Randy said it like that, because, we all travel in circles and stuff. So when you're hanging out with people, or you're in public places, and look, I'm going to say, I think that we're way past the point to where you have to keep your mouth shut. And the people know how I feel, and they need to, guys. So if you're just silently letting people make these decisions that are going to affect you, that's on you. But where I roll and stuff, and people talk about not funding, Department of Homeland Security in the wake of all the stuff going on, they're going to hear it from me. And I believe they should hear it from you, just like we're doing on the show. Lieutenant Jeff.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, the reality is the primary function of government is to provide security for the people within their borders. And if you're not going to be funding those entities that are responsible for that, you're cutting off your nose to spite your face. It makes no sense. This is not the time and the place to have this argument or discussion and withholding funds for those entities that are going to make it safer here for U.S. citizens within our own borders. And it's just nonsense. And it is nice to see now that Fetterman speaks up, and as well as we're seeing a kind of a reversal of opinion of this other political individual. So, at the end of the day, I think we're going to see this swing of that pendulum to some common sense, because it's not rational. There's no logical, rational explanation for the position to not be funding the Department of Homeland Security and all those functions that have to be in place to ensure our safety.
So, good point. Thank you, Jeff. So here's where I'm trying to steer this and where what I want to leave people thinking about. And this is the difference between us and them. So I think that, this female congresswoman who's now changed her, we need to stand up and applaud her. The Dems would not do that for us, but we need to do that for her. She's come to her senses, and she's kept an open mind. She was not so hardcore that she, no matter what happened, she was not willing to pivot and change her mind. So now she's reached the point, whatever that threshold is for her, where she said, okay, light bulb goes off, and now she wants to make the right decision, for the right reasons. And now we're hearing, I mean, it doesn't really matter how we got here, whether it was a Trump thing or whether it was a Biden thing. Now, we know that Biden, kept the borders open for 4 years. So all the criminals are over here. All the terrorists are over here because of that. But other people would argue that because we've started a war with Israel on Iran, that it wasn't much of an issue until that war started. But of course, the alternative would have been, let's just wait till they get a nuclear warhead on a long-range missile that they can start reaching out and touching America, which is what would have happened anyhow. So we didn't have much of a choice. And I applaud the war every day. I'm excited about it. But it doesn't matter how we got here. We're here. We have to fund DHS. I mean, it's just a no-brainer. Even if it was our fault, their fault, it doesn't matter. We got to fund it. Any final words, guys, before we're getting close to commercial break? So we got about 15 seconds.
I'm done.
You're toast. No. So, guys, don't be silent standbyers. reach out and let people know how you feel, and maybe that you'll help the light bulb go off like it did for this congresswoman. So I applaud her. We're up for our second commercial break. Stick with us. We'll be right back. Hi, guys. It's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And they are committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Device Technology. Now, their flagship product we all know by now is called the Glove. It's helped officers, well, I was going to say tens of thousands of times, but they've had over 250,000 deployments with no injuries and no deaths. And you heard that correctly. They've actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention or transitioning to a sidearm or conductor energy weapon, the Glove and ComplianTechnologies.com, they virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions has ever come along. Go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them the Chip sent you. Again, ComplianTechnologies.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Lieutenant Randy Sutton, founder of the Wounded Blue, thewoundedblue.org. Also, Lieutenant Jeff Winninger, former LAPD commander. Thanks so much for being on the show, guys. So we have talked, we've had actually quite the talk so far. We've got one story left, unless you guys want to add anything on a previous one. We've got the Nancy Guthrie case. And of course, I'm talking about Lieutenant Randy Sutton, because he was all over the TV with also Betsy Brantner Smith was hanging out with him. And I saw Darren Porcher, but lawofficer.com did a story, the Nancy Guthrie case, leadership failure in Pima County. You don't say. So we all are aware of some issues going on with maybe a power struggle with the sheriff over there and the FBI. A lot of questions over maybe why the FBI wasn't more involved, if it was there by choice or not, and why evidence is going to Florida instead of to the FBI lab. So Lieutenant Randy Sutton, take it from here.
So yeah, I spent almost 10 days down there reporting on the ground for Fox News and a bunch of other stations as well. But Fox actually asked me to go down and be an analyst for him down there. Me and Betsy and Darren Porcher was there as well. So this is, I'm glad that Travis Yates did this article on lawofficer.com, because he concentrated on the leadership aspect of this and the failure of leadership as it relates to a major investigation. And he hit it right on the head. He did a deep dive on it. And the sheriff there is a mess. He was now caught he's been exposed basically for being an incompetent leader. And now some of the reporters did a deep dive, and they discovered that he left his first police job under a cloud and lied on his resume, his professional resume, about the circumstances, about how he lost his job in the El Paso Police Department for all types of misconduct. And he was forced to resign from the El Paso Police Department. Now, in when he was elected sheriff, none of that came out, of course. Now, here's a little bit more about him. So he is deep in the Democratic machine in Pima County. And Tucson, believe it or not, is a very liberal city. And he was appointed to his first term as sheriff. He didn't get elected. He was appointed because from the political machine, when the sheriff resigned retired. So that was his first. Then he was not reelected. Reelected. Right.
Interesting.
So then another sheriff was in, and then he was elected, and then ran for his reelection this last time. And he is now under investigation for election interference related to this election. And 2 years ago, he was under investigation by the FBI on a RICO investigation, along with another high-ranking officer. And while he was under investigation for that, the other high-ranking officer killed himself. before he could be sent to prison. So one can't help but wonder about, and of course, unfortunately, because his co-conspirator was now dead, apparently the case fell apart. So this guy's a mess. And he made personal decisions based on his hatred of the FBI from calling them in at the beginning. This case was mishandled. He actually took his most experienced homicide guys and arbitrarily, because of some personal conflicts, transferred them out of the unit. So you had inexperienced homicide guys in charge of this. Not to say that these guys are not competent, but you know as well as I do that in order to become a diligent investigator for homicide, you have to have the experience behind you. Now, Tucson is a violent city, right? They have about 50, 55 murders a year. But Pima County doesn't investigate them. Tucson PD investigates them. The Pima County, they have about 5 murders a year, so you can't get that experience. So not to say anything negative against the investigators, but it's simply an experience situation. And now this case has gone cold. I had a conversation with a source and said that remember, there was a massive investigation. Well, now they're down to about 5 cops that are doing it. That tells me that this case has gone cold.
So let me just throw something in because people watch the show and I always, you know, wear like a legal hat on, you know, too, during the shows and stuff. So a lot of the stuff is not firsthand knowledge. So I will put the word allegedly through in front of some of the stuff that that Randy's saying, not that I don't doubt that, but a lot of these are news sources that did the feet on the ground, the boots on the ground in order to get some of this information. But but I had also heard that he was investigated by the FBI. And that's
public knowledge.
That was a huge knowledge. Motivation for him not to get them involved in this investigation. But I know there's some other stuff too. So fascinating information, Randy.
That's why you have me.
Yeah, that's why we pay you the big bucks. And I have a new check coming to you today, Jeff Winninger. 4.5 minutes before our next commercial break.
Yeah, I just thought it was evident very early on in that investigation that the sheriff did not quite have a handle on the severity and scope and magnitude of this crime. You know, the fact that he lifted the crime scene so early on, the narrative that he was giving publicly, you know, I've always lived by this one principle. It's better off to have people think you don't know what you're doing, then open your mouth and remove all doubt. Well, he opened his mouth and removed all doubt multiple times. It was clear to not only those of us that have a background in investigations and in law enforcement, but the general public could see that this guy had no idea what he was doing. And unfortunately, I tend to agree with Randy that I think it really jeopardized the ability for this to have had a more optimal outcome. And here we are. You can't go back and make up for that lost time. And it's I just wonder what the recourse is that the family may have, because I don't think you could find a more botched investigation. You know, it really goes back to that experience level. You have to be humble as a leader. You got to sit there and say, hey, listen, this is the wheelhouse of the FBI. Bring them in. We are here to support you, provide whatever resources you need, but you call the shots, you run this show, this is your game. And, you know, he didn't have the ability to do that. And it's unfortunate.
Yeah, I can't imagine being in charge of an investigation like this. Well, the FBI is not going to step in unless it's something big anyhow, but to have those resources available to you and you just to turn that down, that I absolutely can't even fathom a situation that where I wouldn't let that happen. I mean, and then, of course, if there's any screw-ups, it's on them, you know. Oh.
Well, you'll notice that you didn't see anything from the FBI. You know, normally, they're out there in front of the media, right? You didn't even see them get involved in it. They're letting him hang himself, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's probably good play. So, I mean, unfortunately, you know, the Guthrie family suffers on this one, but yeah, too bad. Well, guys, if you're ready, let's go to a story. We got 2 minutes. Let's go to a story with a video component. I would like to maybe cover, you know, I wish we had Sheriff Mark Kreider on the show, too, because he's a sheriff over in Washington State right now. But let's go to our first story with a video component. And we're going to be in San Diego. So Rumble.com, this is Butter, our favorite law enforcement video channel. San Diego Sheriff's deputies unleash a hail of bullets during a traffic stop at an armed passenger.
Hey, stop reaching around, dude.
I'm not doing nothing, bro.
Stop reaching around.
God damn.
Leave the window down.
I'm just talking to her.
Open the door. He's reaching.
He's reaching.
Let me see your fucking hand. Let me see your fucking hand. Can you break that window?
Unlock the door.
Stop reaching.
Unlock Call 1-1 at gunpoint. Hey, stop fucking reaching.
Stop
fucking reaching. Get your fucking hand out! Get your fucking hand out!
Drop that gun right now! Drop that gun right now!
Go ahead. Take your hand off that fucking gun now! I can't see. Hurry up, Tonto. I can't see. Hurry up.
He's pulling. Okay, drop it.
Don't fucking move! Don't! Drop it!
Don't do it!
Drop it! Don't do it, man!
Stop!
Don't do it!
Stop! Please stop!
Don't do it! I'm gonna tase you!
Hey, tase him!
Drop it! Don't do it, man! Don't do it! Don't do it! I'm gonna tase you!
So you heard that correctly. So we're in San Marcos, California. And so, look, they start off by saying disturbing body cam footage. So it's a little slanted from the get-go. But there's six cops.
Didn't disturb me any.
I know. But I just always makes you wonder when the first word is disturbing, describing the body cam footage, it just makes you wonder, you know, I can just already see the Associated Press writing it now. So we got six police officers and they say unloading their clips is what they say on a car passenger who grabbed his gun. Oh, you don't say, and fired during a tent standoff in the San Diego area. I got to admit, guys, until I watched the video, I watched the slow motion, I watched the freeze frame. Not until I read the article did I really realize the bad guy got the first shot off. I thought the cops did. I did not realize that. The San Diego Sheriff's Department released the video of the deadly encounter February the 18th in San Marcos, a 33-year-old bad guy, but he was in the passenger in the vehicle. He was killed after, a routine traffic stop. That is why these things are so valuable in getting rid of these bad guys, because sometimes it's the only way you're going to get hold of a bad guy. I'm going to stop there. It's involved, but I don't want to lose my momentum when I start talking about this. So I'm going to create a verbal word picture for the people listening to the show. We're going to dissect this and talk about it. We'll be right back from commercial break in just a second. We'll see you in a few seconds. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And, you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and also disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at GunLearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist, like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Afianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since way back in 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and even police departments nationwide. Now, the founder, Daniel Kelly, has got a deal for you. If you have your own agency, if you're a chief or a sheriff, you can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. You can go to GunLearn.com to get more information. And again, that is GunLearn.com. And watch the videos. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Lieutenant Jeff Weninger, former LAPD commander, and also Lieutenant Randy Sutton from Las Vegas Metro Police Department, the founder of the Wound to Blue at thewoundtoblue.org. And we left off talking about a story with a video component. San Diego Sheriff's deputies unleash a hail of bullets during a traffic stop at an armed passenger. The story's a little slanted in its wording, but it talks about we have body cam, we have six cops, and we have a vehicle that's being pulled over for just a routine traffic stop. And so we got the deputies repeatedly asking this guy on the passenger side, Andre Rafael Mendez, to drop his pistol during this chaotic encounter. There's a female passenger, or I'm sorry, female driver, and it starts off body cam. They're dealing with her, but then they start dealing with the passenger. And just going from memory, he gives a bad name, and now they come back and they know, okay, the name's not adding up. Now they think the vehicle might be stolen. And while they're interacting with the guy and his passenger window is rolled down, he starts leaning forward and like messing with something under the seat. And at the same time, he starts rolling his window up, despite the cop telling him, dude, keep your window down. And even at the last minute, the cop takes his flashlight and tried to keep the window, but he didn't get it. He didn't get it in time. And so now this guy, they're giving him, we got like six cops surrounding the car. They eventually get the female driver out. I kind of wish they would have done that a little sooner, you know, because how there was not a shooting before that. And even they finally saw that he had a gun under the seat. I'm glad that she didn't get, there was no collateral damage from her. And so this is going back and forth. So you finally have a guy on the passenger side that's wearing our main body cam, giving commands to someone to break the window. And the guy goes, who, me? You know, it's almost like, you know, it was like, really, seriously? And then when they're breaking the window, they're using like an expandable metal baton. They didn't really, I was kind of disappointed. They didn't have any better tools because it took forever. And I just, you know, you always suspect with the bad guy with the gun leaning forward and his hands, glasses going everywhere, you know, you kind of can like tell where, if I had to put money on it, I would have ventured to say that would have happened, what ended up happening. So sure enough, the glass is broken out. We have a dude that runs up with a taser and he yells taser and goes and tases the bad guy. And that's when both hands come up. Now, I saw them light him up, but then I saw the slow motion with freeze frame, and I actually saw the gun pointed at the cops before they unloaded on him. And then I read the article and find out that the bad guy actually had time to actually fire his gun before they even shot him. That's scary. I'll let you guys discuss. We have a serious issue, and we're lucky we don't have a dead cop. The video includes footage from all six deputies. I think there were really two decent videos from there that showed the stuff. And I've already given the other information on this. And the bad guy died. I mean, look, there was no look. You didn't have to even tell me that in the article. If he didn't die from that OK Corral shooting, there were issues. They all had to go back to the range and learn how to shoot. Jeff, you want to start us off on this one? We got 6 minutes and 20 seconds.
Yeah, my greatest concern is like what you mentioned is the fact that the suspect got the first shot off. And once the officers became aware that he had possession of a firearm, I thought it was great that they got that woman out prior to that, which was good. They kind of limited the potential for an escalation by having somebody else in there that would have to be part of their focus and decision-making relative to the tactics they were going to use. But what I saw was a crossfire that was really ugly. And I would have liked to have seen them be more disciplined. With the LAPD, you would handle that as if it was no different than if you had a barricaded suspect inside of a garage or a home. That vehicle serves as a position of concealment. We know he's armed with a gun. He's refusing to comply with our instructions. And you would contain and control that location and start blocking off traffic and controlling things. So to be able to best incorporate the tactics that will put you in best favor of being able to solve this thing optimally. Most importantly, not being in a position where the suspect's getting a round off while you're standing just outside the window. Because really what you're talking about is it's a 50-50. And we don't seem to realize that if you understand how our bodies, the biology and the neuroscience behind all of this, the time that it takes, even if your gun is drawn and you have it in a position to shoot, once you perceive that lethal threat is present, there is a delay. And the average shooter can get, you know, two, sometimes even three shots off before you can respond. So that was a critical concern. I would have liked to have seen it more methodically and systematically handled and bring in better resources. Like you said, collapse the baton to break the window is probably not optimal. Get some better resources there.
How long were we listening to him hammer that window? What, 30 seconds? It was just like crazy. Yeah.
Not only that, but it inhibited the officer who was at the window, his ability to see the movement of the suspect. So, and then why in God's name would you deploy a taser at that moment? I mean, this was a deadly force situation. They warned him and warned him and warned him and warned him, and then he got a shot off. This deadly force encounter should have been should have happened a lot sooner. He was a deadly threat. He was not complying. He was armed. Why you don't shoot him immediately? This is what we're training our cops to do now. We're training our cops to not effectively use deadly force at the appropriate time, because these guys are scared to death of either some administrative discipline or even being prosecuted if they don't, if it isn't so abundantly clear that this guy was a deadly threat. So this makes me crazy that we are not training our cops to survive. We're training our cops to be reactive instead of taking the appropriate action at the appropriate time. And we're seeing this all over the country. And I'm telling you, we had four cops shot in 2 days last week. Four cops shot in 2 days. This is not effective law enforcement. And we have to go back to the basics here.
Agreed. Well, if you guys are ready, we've got this one last one. Sheriff Keith Swank refuses to retract non-citizen hiring post. And that's at lawofficer.com. So we're Pierce County Sheriff's Keith Swank. We've only got 2 minutes, so I'll do this quick. He's standing his ground in public dispute with county prosecutors over his declaration that his office will not hire non-citizens as deputies or corrections officers. And it's put him at odds with the county's legal advisor, state law, and Washington state legislature that recently passed a bill that broadened law enforcement hiring eligibility, non-citizens, right? So it goes all the way back to January 20th. And he posted on X, formerly Twitter, he stated that the Pierce County Sheriff's Office would not hire non-citizens. And it was written in response to Senate Bill 5068, originally postponed extending eligibility for law enforcement hiring to anyone authorized to work in the United States under federal law. And by the time the bill passed, the state legislature amendments had removed police officers from the provisions. But the and then we got this Washington sheriff removal bill that's getting closer to the law as well. So Pierce County prosecutors, they sent the sheriff a legal memo on January 21st, said, hey, take the post down and issue a correction stating that you will hire non-citizens. And he said, you know, basically, I don't care what she says, meaning the prosecutor, I'm not taking it down. And so that's where it's at. We got 53 seconds. We'll go a little bit over. We have to, Lieutenant Randy.
So the real story here is what you just mentioned. They are right now passing a law that will allow the removal of elected sheriffs if they don't go along with their political beliefs. This is one of the most dangerous things I've ever seen in subverting law enforcement, because elected sheriffs have more power than the chiefs of police because they can be fired. Well, now they are removing the ability for these sheriffs to effectively lead because they are now creating the ability to remove them. This is an outrage. Sick.
Well, and the prosecutor, it's Mary Romnett.
Yeah, she's
R-O-B-N-E-T-T. Yeah. All right. Well, we're coming up on the end of the wire. Hey, Randy Sutton, thank you so much. Jeff Weninger, thank you guys so much for being on the show. And I do want to mention the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Lieutenant Randy Sutton's 501c3 that's helping cops out in a world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD and other issues. But I'll let you hear it from the man himself, Randy Sutton.
Yeah, thewoundedblue.org. We've helped more than 17,000 police officers in the last 7 years. So if you're a law enforcement officer and you're struggling because of either a physical injury or emotional, psychological, reach out to us at thewoundedblue.org. We are working unbelievable situations, and we are helping to save lives, save marriages, and save careers. Go to thewoundedblue.org and give what you can, because we are a charity and we need it.
Yep. I support them monthly as well. Please consider it, guys. I also want to mention Jeff Winterger's book, On Thin Ice, at onthinicebook.com. Check that out. Our shout out to our sponsors, Gulls.com, ComplianceTechnologies.com. We have Gunlearn.com. We have MyMedicare.live, SafeguardRecruiting.com, and TubeBells.com. We'll see you guys back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.